Hi, everybody. This is Betsy Wurzel, host of Chatting with Betsy, a Passionate World Talk Radio. And you're going to want to stay tuned because I have, and I'm very honored to have a wonderful guest and advocate. Katia De Luisa wrote a book, Journey Through the Infinite Mind, The Science and Spirituality of Dementia. That title alone catches my eye. Very interesting title. And I want to welcome Katia De Luisa to Chatting with Betsy. Well,
thank you, Betsy, for having me on your program.
You're welcome. I'm so glad we connected. You are my very first international interview. So I'm happy.
<That's great.
laughs> I'm happy.
That
is so
too.
Cool. And I just love what you write. Katia also has a blog. Now, I would like for everyone who's listening, make sure you read the blog Jeannie White writes, because information will be in there. And I want to thank Jeannie White for producing this show. Katia, tell us about your book, why you wrote it, and what would you like the reader to get out of your book?
Well, why I wrote it was I had been doing program development. I created a picture communication program for late-stage Alzheimer's, and I had partnered with the Alzheimer's Association in Sarasota, Florida, and we were doing caregiver workshops for several years. I got pretty burnt out on the elder care system because I'm a boomer. I'm 71 years old, and it somehow or another, every time I walked into a nursing home or a facility, I saw my face on the superimposed on the faces of the residents, and I just felt that that whole system was not set up for me. So I stopped working for a while, and then I just decided to write a book. I said, why don't I just write a book and put everything in there that I haven't been able to say? And that's how the book came about. And I wanted to highlight the science of dementia, because I got pretty far out in the book. In other words, I think the human being is more than just their physical or their brain capacity. They're also a human spirit, and I don't think that's addressed enough. So the book is, half of the book is about the science of dementia, why, how come, written very easily for people to understand. And then it goes into, is the mind and the brain the same thing? In other words, is our human consciousness more than just our brain-generated thoughts? And then it takes off into a whole nother area. Hopefully the reader starts to ask questions for themselves. That's what the book was written for, was to help people to step out of the box and start asking questions for themselves.
That sounds very interesting. And what do you think is the spiritual side of dementia that you would like people to know?
Well, you know, everybody has their own spiritual beliefs, and it's as individual as the dementia is in people. I believe, my own personal belief sort of runs a little bit towards Buddhism. So, I mean, I'm not a Buddhist. I'm spiritual but not religious. So I just wanted to kind of incorporate, say, for instance, different spiritual beliefs. There's some different spiritual beliefs in there. There's the idea would be to, if this is fact, maybe this is happening. So that's what my blogs are about. My blogs kind of take a lot of the information that I've researched and then take it a little bit farther into what is the human spirit. I can't tell you what the human spirit is. I can only tell you what I believe it to be. And that pretty much has to do with the fact that I believe that our soul is an energy, and our whole body is composed of energy. So we're actually not a solid. We're not solid. That's science. That's why I like incorporating both science and spirituality. So I started thinking, well, energy can't be destroyed. It can only be changed. Maybe that's what the soul is. The soul is this energy, this spark that makes us function. In other words, we can't function without it. When we die, the body is nothing more than, I always say, a meat suit, you know, that's left behind. So what is it that actually makes us function as human beings? So the book really focuses on dementia and the changes in dementia, but it also has a lot to do with human consciousness. So it hopefully opens up people's minds as well as educates them about dementia.
That sounds very interesting. And I want to tell the listeners, I love your blogs, and I want to encourage listeners, go on Katya's website, www.theinfinitemind.org. That's your website, and you see her blogs.
Yes.
Now, I'm in a lot of groups that you were in, Katya, and I love your blogs. They are informative, and you are also an advocate. And I love that.
Yes.
You
yes.
do advocacy for the person with dementia about nursing homes and treating a person like a human being that they are. And I love that about your articles. My husband passed away in January. He had early onset. And thank you. And I could tell you that, and it took me a long time to learn this, that they do feed off of our energy.
Oh, yes.
Whatever, you know, the good energy, mm-hmm. the negative, and you could see it. And I feel this way, Katya, that, and I say this, Alzheimer's, whatever dementia, my husband had early onset, it could rob the brain. It cannot rob the heart. And I held on to that hope because I knew that my husband knew, he knew that we loved him and he loved us and he knew who we were really until he couldn't talk anymore. And I, you know that he, this might sound cuckoo to the people out there, but I feel that Matt is with me, but in a different way. Because I still smell him, and I look for signs.
Oh, great! Yeah.
Now, do you talk about that in your book by any chance?
Absolutely. I talk about how emotions are energy in motion, and so of course they're going to pick up on your energy. And what happens when they pick up on your emotional energy is they mirror it. They can't rationalize what it's about. They just take it on and they mirror it. So if you're stressed, they become stressed. If you're calm and happy, they become calm and happy. Actually, the energy is what moves them. That's what they're picking up. They're the perfect empaths. They can actually feel what you feel. So that is definite. And then if the soul is energy, of course it would continue afterwards. And in my book, I have a chapter on, I talk about a relationship that I had with a man that I met in one of the nursing homes, and he was in the later stages of dementia. He had actually pretty much lost most of his ability to communicate verbally, and yet we had this incredible connection. I call him my greatest teacher because he just taught me so much about human consciousness when you can no longer communicate. The brain is like a computer that just sorts out our environment. In other words, for us to function in this environment, we have to perceive with our senses, we have to feel what it's about, and then we think. So we actually perceive, feel, and then think. Thinking is not the first thing that we do. So, and also perceiving and thinking, perceiving and feeling affects how we think. So how we perceive something and how we feel about it affects our thoughts. So thoughts are kind of the third thing on the train, and that's what we use to communicate, usually thoughts with words, and we communicate with other people with that. Well, when you have dementia, that diminishes. You start to lose the train of thoughts. You start to lose the ability to communicate what's going on. The outer world starts to take on a different perception. You start perceiving differently. Your senses pick up different input than the other people. So their world, their interior world, is a different world than what we are living in and functioning in. And too often the caregiver, because they are used to, especially if it's a family member, They relate to who they were in the past. They look at the person and they say, okay, this is my husband, this is my wife, this is my mother. But it's not your husband, your wife, or your mother anymore. They've moved out of that role. In other words, husband, wife, daughter, all of that is nothing but roles. And they're going to forget those roles. They do not forget you. And they do not forget how you make them feel. If you make them feel loved and safe, they do not forget that. Interesting thing, when I would do my workshops, I used to do caregiver training, but then I also created the communication workshops with people with dementia. And I would, just once a week, we would have it in different nursing homes. And when I would come in a week later, I would start to look behind me and I'd have a train of people just kind of shuffling along behind me, following me. Why? Because they actually, those collage workshops, those workshops where they could use pictures to communicate with the volunteers, I always had 10 volunteers and 10 residents. It was their communication. They felt good during that. They didn't know why they were following me, but they knew that something I was about to do made them feel good. So they never forget how you make them feel. That's the heart connection that you're talking about. And I truly believe in that. I believe that's the that's where you need to communicate with people with dementia, because they can't do it anymore in what we consider to be the normal forms of communication.
You bring out a lot of excellent points, Katya, because people have, and I'm sure you've encountered it, you know, they have the attitude, well, they don't know who I am, so why should I bother? And this is why we need to visit our loved ones, because they do know who you are, even if they can't say your name. They know that voice. They know that connection, that heart-to-heart connection that you're talking about. Absolutely. I believe that. And just, you know, the touch. We're human beings. We like to be touched, that human contact. And when my husband couldn't talk anymore because he was heavily sedated near the end of his life, I would stroke his hand and his head and tell him I love him, and mm-hmm. he would try to look at me. I knew mm-hmm. he knew that who I was. He knew my voice, and I actually had severe laryngitis at the time. So I would say, Matt, this is Betsy. I know I have severe laryngitis. I hope you know that it's me, but he knew, and I just wish that people out in the audience, you know, if you have a family member and they have some kind of dementia, please, well, I know it's the pandemic, you may not be able to see them now, but it's over and you can see them, please go see them. It's so important. You would want people to visit you and connect with you. And this is so sad, Katya, that people don't get that concept. They don't get that they do understand. They do know the voice and who you are. I just love where you're coming from. I love your vibration.
I think it's really important to understand they don't know who you are in the sense of how we know who people are. If you understand that dementia is another world, all right, they recognize you. They don't recognize you as Betsy. That's a label. He didn't recognize you as his wife because he lost that. He recognized you on a much deeper level than just being Betsy or a wife. That is never lost. And it's so important for people in the audience to realize that no nursing home, no facility can give them love. They supply physical, they give the physical care, they try to entertain them in the activities programs, but basically most nursing homes or facilities have, revolving door employees. And a lot of them try to not have the employees get emotionally attached to the residents. They find that detrimental to their work. So what happens is the person who's in the facility isn't getting what every human being needs more than physical care, which is to feel loved. And that's what the family visiting needs to bring with them. Once they bring that with them, then the person with dementia that is a resident in a facility is getting what they need. And they can only get that love from family members. Now, there can be very loving CNAs and very loving nurses, in my experience, I didn't find a whole lot of them. They were basically stressed. They had a lot of people to take care of. They didn't have time to spend any kind of one-on-one interaction with the residents. And, I mean, I'm not saying any of this is their fault, but this is just basically how this whole system is set up, is to basically warehouse seniors. So it's so important. I can't even stress how important it is for people to make it special. Every time you go, bring a little tiny something. Wrap it in a present. You know, I always say, wrap it in like birthday paper and with a little bow or something on it and say, oh, we're bringing you this present. Oh, my God, it will just light them up. Every single time you go, make sure it's going to be some kind of special small thing that they will remember how they feel about you and you coming to visit them. And isn't that what's the most important part of visiting your loved one? Is visiting your loved one for them, or is it for you, or should it be for both of you? In other words, it's not a one-way street here. It's you want them to feel good because you're there. You also want to feel good. You don't want to walk away from your visit feeling, oh, my God, you know, I feel so guilty that they're there. And this is very normal with most families. So take something with you. Bring something fun for them. Make it fun for yourself, too. It's not just go sit in a chair. And I've seen this over and over again. Family members are just sitting in a chair and they're talking to each other while the person that they're visiting is what they think lost in another world. Well, they're totally excluded, but they've done their mandatory visit. That doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's better not to visit if that's all you're going to do. You really have to connect your heart with this person and not believe that they're gone. They are never gone. Even on their deathbed at the very last moments, they are not gone. There is an awareness of you, like you said, Betsy. There is an awareness that you're there with them. Love is the strongest bond there is. It's the strongest energy bond there is. I'm sorry, I'm getting... I really... And oh, I just get so upset.
I love
my
it.
Voice is like, you know...
I love you. I love what you're... I do. I love what you're saying, Katya, because people need to realize this. You know, I said that I was going to love Matt right up to heaven's door. And I did. And I was, you know, holding his hand. And I knew, you know, it was his time. And, you know, Josh and I played, Josh is our son. You know, we played music. We talked to Matt. And, you know, I even think back, Matt's mom had Alzheimer's and she was in a facility. And she didn't talk, but when Josh came to see her, her face lit up like the 4th of July.
Yeah. Absolutely.
She loved seeing Josh. I'd bring her down, you know, to the coffee shop, and I would get ice cream, or I'd bring it up to her, and I would read to her. And mm-hmm. she was smiling, and she was happy. And I just think it's so important what you're saying and so true. And I was taught this. I used to work as a licensed practical nurse. It was drummed into my head. Hearing is the last sentence to go, and they can hear
really
me.
Really.
And yeah, hearing is the last sense. Some nursing instructor would say, don't talk about the patient in front of the patient. Even if they're in a coma, you don't know, they can hear you. They can hear what you're saying, so watch what you say. And I just, you know, remember that. I mean, that's back in the Stone Age when I went to nursing school back in 1975-76. Because I'm a baby boomer, too. I'm 62. And I just, you know, think it's going to be more and more baby boomers, of course, are going to get some kind of dementia. And I think baby boomers are going to cause a revolution on how they want to be treated in their retirement years, not be thrown into a nursing home and be forgotten about. They're going to want a different setup, maybe like a group home situation.
I mean, just change the activities program. I think I would die of boredom in the activities programs that most of the facilities have. And heaven forbid they should try to get me to play bingo. They're going to have a lot of trouble with my behavior if they try to get me to play bingo, for gosh sakes. There was a story on one of my blogs. I wrote about this woman called Maddie. And she was, it was years ago, it was probably 10, 12 years ago, and I was working as an advocate for a resident in one of the facilities. And I used to talk a lot about how this system has to change. It's not adequate for us. It's set up for our parents. And Maddie was 53 years old, and she was put in the facility. She was admitted to the facility with early onset dementia. And she was very verbal, very verbal. And she swore a lot. Well, this woman was a doctor who had worked in free clinics, in these clinics in deprived neighborhoods. And so she was very socially conscious. She was highly social, and she never lost that. But the nursing home was just, she had that place upside down. The facility was upside down with Maddie. She'd walk down the hall swearing like a sailor. She hated the activities program. She'd storm out. They had to finally get some 60s music for her just to calm her down and bring her into a separate room and put on some 60s and 70s music for her because she couldn't stand the Second World War Bing Crosby stuff. And one day I heard this commotion, and she loved going into the garden. And the door, it was in Florida, and when it was really hot outside, they had to lock that door and not let the residents out because sometimes it would be 100 degrees. Well, Maddie, her escape was to the garden, and she couldn't get into the garden, and she was pushing on that door and pushing on. So finally what she did is she got about 7 or 8 residents to help her push on the door, and they actually got it open, and all the alarms went off, and all the residents scattered, and Maddie goes running out into the garden. I mean, she was halfway over that wall when they finally caught her. That's a baby boomer. So what are the facilities going to do when they've got, say, 25 Maddies in their facility? She to me was like the epitome of the beginning of the tip of the iceberg as far as the baby boomers and the present elder care system, which is totally antiquated. And I agree with you. I believe in there's a new programs coming out that are called, it's called co-housing, and it's starting to pop up all over the world. And you know, did you ever see the series The Golden Girls?
Yes, love that show.
Okay, remember how they lived? They were so different. They were so completely different. And yet they cohabitated together, and it was hysterical, most of everything that went on. The one thing they had in common was they had this heartfelt commitment to each other, no matter how different they were. And for me, that's the only thing that's really going to work with us. I think small group homes are going to be popping up all over the place. I think dementia villages, which are starting to be built all over the world right now, I think Canada's got 3 of them that are being built right now, and New Zealand has 1, and Australia has 4. So I think this whole idea of a different type of care for people just aging and with dementia is starting to happen. It's, you know, it's in its infancy, but it is starting to happen. And hopefully it happens sooner than later, especially since I'm 71 and aging as I speak.
Yes, I was, a while back I had did a talk on people will be having different living arrangements, you know, like the Golden Girls situation, especially women, because women did not at that particular time make as much money as, say, a man. So women are living in the poverty level, And so they, to keep a roof over their head, they might need help. And they might even have some male boarders. And, of course, you know, people mm-hmm. might start judging and talking. But you know what? Why not? Why not have people like a little commune? That's how I could see the hippies, the aging hippies having some kind of a commune for people as they are aging. And that would be cool. And you could barter services and, you know, help each other.
Well, I think the commune, it didn't work in the 60s because I was there. And it worked for a while, but it doesn't work on a long-term basis. And the one factor that I think is really important to take into effect with the boomers is that we're a very independent generation. I love my space. So it would have to be, co-housing would have to be where each person really has their physical space. And that's also being discussed and planned and so on. I mean, I'm constantly on sites where there's, you know, co-housing ideas, because I live in Costa Rica, and I mean, I believe that this is a wonderful country to start developing new living arrangements for aging expats. And so it has to be where it's not where everybody's sharing. And I mean, the commune was, I mean, you shared everything. It was kind of, you became a homogenized element into the commune. I think maintaining the individuality of the person has to be put into the question of how to put together some kind of living situations with people. And, of course, I think it should be co-ed. I think it should be male and female. I would love it if it was intergenerational. I think there's too much focus on, okay, let's put all the seniors here, and we only have only 55 and older. You know, what, heaven forbid we should hear a child crying or kids in the playground or, you know, I don't think that's normal for human beings. This is not a normal setup for human beings. We need to create villages. You know, it takes a village to raise a child. Well, it also takes a village to take care of their elderly. And so, I mean, yeah. I'm looking at different kinds of ideas for, you know, senior care and senior living, which include generations. If you have a village where you've got younger people living there, you also have ready availability of helpers to help you as you get older. So it has to be more than just taking the seniors and putting them all in a lump somewhere and saying, okay, this is where you're going to live, and the rest of the world goes on with their life. I think seniors have to be included in just living. The living situation, and that means intergenerational.
Yes, and you know, when I took my son to visit his grandma and his great grandma, they love seeing children. They love it. I have visions. I think it would be great to have an adult daycare in with a preschool, because mm-hmm. they love to have to be around children, and it, you know, brightens them up. It cheers up their spirit. And, absolutely. You know, back in the older days, I worked at a nursing home when I was 16 and 17. And it's weird, Katya, because those people were 65, but they looked older. And yeah. I'm thinking, well, here I am, 62. Those people were 65 and up. And they were just, you know, put into the home, and not too many relatives would visit them, and it was sad. It was really sad for me to see as a teenager people not being, you know, loved in their elderly years. Yeah. Katya, is there any specific place where people can purchase your book?
Amazon. How would they purchase it's on your Amazon, book? Barnes & Noble, and I believe there's a Kindle Vision version on Kobo, or I think Amazon also has a Kindle version.
Okay. And can you say your website again?
Where people www.theinfinitemind.org.
And
it's in process.
I'm developing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm developing here in Costa Rica an international dementia project. So it's only about 2 months old. We just got the website up, so the website is still, you know, in process, but it's up and running, and the blogs are there. Pretty much I write a blog about every other day. So, and they are pretty, I believe they're pretty informative for people, that it gets you to think about certain things that are commonly happening with your loved one that maybe you hadn't thought about why that's happening. In other words, you know, when a person gets diagnosed with dementia, they really don't get a whole lot of tools from the medical community. They sort of say, okay, here's the diagnosis, and off they go. Because I do a mentoring program also. And what I'm finding with the couples, I love to mentor a person, a family, you know, like a wife and a husband together. I love to do that if the person with dementia is in the earlier stages. Because I've discovered that the communication between the two, even in the earlier stages, is very lacking. You know, it's very hard to understand what is changing in the world of your loved one. And it's incredibly important to maintain the communication throughout even the last stages of dementia. And like you say, touch. Even just if they can't communicate anything else, touch is always communicated. And because they lose touch with their body, they actually cannot feel their body in the space around them. They cannot locate their foot or their hand. Whenever you touch them, what you're doing is you're bringing them into contact with yourself and the world around them. So even if they seem asleep or unconscious, this is what you're doing every time you touch that person. So communication, for me, that's my focus, is how to maintain communication with the person with dementia.
That's absolutely important. And I like that you had mentioned earlier that, you know, we have to enter their world. They can't adjust to our world. We have to adjust to their world. I found that a little difficult at first, to be honest. And I did learn a lot. And you're right. The doctors don't give you tools. I had to learn on my own. And I learned from other caregivers once I went on Facebook 6 years ago. And the advice from other caregivers helped me tremendously. I can honestly say it, a neurologist did not help me at all in tools in dealing with Alzheimer's. And when my mother-in-law had it back in 20 years ago, there was not the information. And I want to suggest to the listening audience, please go on Katia Deweese's website. Look at her blogs. They are so informative. I learn something every time I read it. And I appreciate what you are doing, Katia, to bring awareness, doing your advocacy. I think it's great, and I highly recommend people to go purchase this book. It sounds very interesting. And thank you so much for coming on Chatting with Betsy. Is there any words of wisdom or anything you'd like to say?
The only thing I'd like to leave you with is that the listeners understand that the person with dementia is never gone. They're never gone. That's the thing that breaks my heart, is that the family believes they've lost the person, and they're not dead yet. One family even held a funeral for their mother, and she was still in a nursing home, just for them to get through the emotional loss that they were feeling. It's really, really important to understand that person is still in there. And don't go see them and just assume that they are unaware that you are with them. That's what I'd like to leave people with.
Thank you so much, Katia. I really appreciate you coming on. Listeners, if you missed any of this audio cast, you can subscribe to Chatting with Betsy on Apple Podcasts, iHeart, Amazon Alexa, Spotify, Spreaker, CastBox. It's free to subscribe. That way you know when my shows are up. And I want to give a big thank you to you, Katia DeLuisa. Thank you, listeners, for listening. Folks, it's not easy. We know that. But love up on your loved one. They need it. We all need love. We're human beings. And be kind and shine your light, because we need it in this world now more than ever to shine bright our light. And I want to thank you again, Katia, for coming on. Folks, this month is June. You're welcome. It's Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month. So if you want to, come on Chatting with Betsy and tell your story, tell your experience. Please do. If you have a dementia yourself, you are welcome to come on my show, talk about your experience. Post on your Facebook page. Show awareness. Show your loved one's journey. Bring any dementia out of the closet and into the spotlight where it belongs, so people can see the journey, all of it. And I just want everyone to be safe, and God bless you till I chat again. This is Betsy Wurzel, host of Chatting with Betsy and Passionate World Talk Radio. Bye-bye now.